is the Jerry DePoto Show.
Presented by Ram Trucks.
And GEICO. Every Thursday at 3:30 with Danny, Dave, and more.
Looking forward to it every week.
The latest transactions. The breakdown on the Mariners' latest moves. The reason behind the decisions that shape the organization.
I love the time together. It gives me a chance to hold myself accountable.
Now, here's Danny, Dave, and more.
And Jerry, we welcome you in. And I guess the first question, it seems like D. Gordon's great toe. It might not be great. It might still be, but it's good enough for him to be playing. That's got to be exciting for you guys to get him back in the lineup.
It's great. I think the idea of having D. back at the top of the lineup is exciting. He looks healthy. He's running well. He feels comfortable, you know, pushing off on that foot. And I think we're all excited to see him get back out there tonight.
Jerry, when you look at the contributions he's made, I love the style of baseball that he plays, how aggressive he is, how he uses speed. He doesn't walk a ton, but that's never sort of been his MO, and he feels he's a better hitter. He talked about that when he waits, he ended up striking out a ton. So go up there with the approach of rake first. That was a style of player that wasn't in vogue with the rise of kind of emphasis on on-base percentage. What have you learned about the kind of player he is in these 50 games since you guys acquired him?
Well, a lot like what you just described. And we kind of view controlling the strike zone as something a little bit different than maybe public perception. We define the way we control the strike zone by our ability to put the ball in play, to not walk hitters as pitchers, to grind through at bats. And at the end of the day, you can achieve on base percentage in a couple of different ways. And as long as you have guys in your lineup who can grind and get on via the walk, and we do have guys like that. Mitch Haniger has that trait. Denard Span now brings that trait. And when he's himself and he's right, Nelson Cruz has that trait. Robinson Cano can do that. You know, it gives us a nice length. But D. Gordon, Gene Segura, to a degree, Guillermo Heredia, what those guys have done this year in their ability to create excitement and just play an athletic brand of baseball, it's kind of what we wanted to do. And what we kind of set out to try to achieve 3 years ago was to be more athletic, to do things a little different than other teams were doing, because we surmised that it would be very difficult to just go toe-to-toe with the big boys, because eventually it comes down to, you know, that whether or not you spend the $200 million or $250 million. And we wanted to find a different way to run our engine, and D. Gordon is a big part of that.
Well, it's certainly working. I was looking at the run differential today. I couldn't believe the difference between where the Mariners are and the Houston Astros, and yet there's a one-game difference in the standings. The Astros are plus 123, Jerry, and the Mariners are plus 8.
That is a fact.
Yeah, so, I know.
Big
I know.
Facts,
well,
Jim.
And you know what, Jerry? I credit you for not really responding right away there, because I didn't ask you a question. But I think that's emblematic of your team. You've had so much success with the one-run games, and so it says a lot. I'm not even going to ask you another question, but it says a lot about your team that they're able to persevere and win these games.
Well, I think it has a lot to do with the character of our club. It also has a lot to do with our bullpen. And, you know, prior to these last few nights, our bullpen had been one of the best in the league for most of the last 2 months. And I think that's and it's only getting better, we feel, with some of the additions we've been able to make recently. And teams who've been able to outproduce or outperform their run differential are typically built on a stronger bullpen model. And we feel like we've done that. And here, a lot of the hay that we've made over the course of the last 6 weeks or so, you know, in the standings and just generally in one loss, has been on the back of our pitching staff, while so many of our hitters have been beat up. And, you know, with the grinder win, when half your lineup is on the DL, is probably going to result in a lot of one-run losses and one-run wins. And that's kind of the boat we've been in. So the fact that we have a pretty tight run differential isn't entirely shocking to me, but you know, we're kind of built to play close games anyway, which is why we've spent so much time and focus on the bullpen in recent years.
Hey, Jerry, we just talked about Nelson Cruz coming back last seven, a couple home runs, six RBIs, batting .321, and this may sound like a dumb question, I guess, but you know, he's 37 years old. So when a guy struggles like that and he's getting on in age, What are sort of the, you know, other than sitting in a rocking chair and smoking a pipe, what are the telltale signs that a guy is starting to get old? Because I know for me, as an athlete at age 31, I didn't feel like I'd lost a step, but yet I had. And I just wonder if it's difficult to detect that because it happens so gradually.
It, for the player, it happens very gradually. And I agree with you. I know at 31 years old, I felt like I was a better player than I was at 21. And, you know, that might not actually be true, but I felt like it was. And Nelly's no different. The difference the difference in his case is that he actually has been much better as a guy in his mid to late 30s than he was when he was in his mid to late 20s. And now we're seeing the best years of Nelson's career over the course of the last four or so, and that's a phenomenal thing. He takes such good care of himself, and he's been so steady and productive. And I do think that a lot of what has happened over the course of the first 2 months of this season with Nelson has much more to do with all of the nicks and bruises and the dings. He is like walking around like a human bruise right now, and it is anything from the ankle early in the season, late in the spring, to being hit by a pitch as frequently as anybody since Craig Biggio, it seems, and not simple hit by pitches. You know, getting it on the knob of the elbow three nights out of four. It's taking balls that just shouldn't happen. And my sense is that what you've seen over the last two or three days is you're starting to see Nelson get healthy. And when he gets healthy, there's a pretty good chance it's going to get loud again.
We've got Jerry DePoto with us. His weekly visit is brought to you by Ram Trucks and by Geico. You mentioned Nelson kind of being a late bloomer. Are there any other players that are comparable in that way who've been as good of late bloomers as Nelson Cruz has? Because he's had incredible productivity throughout his 30s.
I can't think of one that happened that late in a career. You know, that part of it has been remarkable. There are late bloomers, you know, and guys that are clicking in their late 20s. Guys, and frankly, Mitch Haniger's one of them. Josh Donaldson stands out or comes to mind. J.D. Martinez comes to mind as guys who maybe in their young 20s weren't dynamic and in their late 20s really kind of hit the ground running. And Nelson was a really good player in his late 20s. In his early 30s, but he's taken it to another level. He went from being a very good player to being a really excellent player over the course of the last 4 or 5 years. And, you know, a testament to him. Part of that was just staying healthy and staying on the field, which I think has been, you know, helped along by more DH time and less time in the outfield. But part of it has just been a better approach, more consistent barrel to ball action and controlling the strike zone in a different way than maybe he was in his young days with the Rangers.
One guy we're hoping to see find some consistency in his 30s is Felix Hernandez. And I thought this last start, it was unfortunate. He's had a lot of inherited runners that he's left on base in the game, which are obviously his responsibility that have come back to score. I also go back to that Oakland game, though, where he gives up the runs in the first inning and then goes on and retires, 17 of 18 hitters he faced, or 16 of the final 17. What's missing from Felix maybe being able to make more of a complete effort, a consistent effort over the course of a game?
Well, I wish I knew. And that is, if we could put our finger on it in a maybe more significant way, we might be able to help him more than we are. But I know the one thing that I do trust every fifth day when Felix takes the ball and goes out there, like you just alluded to, whether he gets off good or he gets off poorly in the first round or first inning, he is going to compete. And whether it's coming back and retiring 16 out of 17 or hanging in there until the fifth or sixth inning and allowing the lineup to do what they do or the bullpen to take over, he gives us a chance. And he did it again just this past start. And unfortunately, we let him down a little bit. And having inherited a lot of runners over the course of my lifetime, it's a tough one when you're coming in there with the bases loaded and nobody out. And you're certain to give up one or two of them. Your goal is to strand the guy on first base and find three outs. And we weren't able to do that. And we've got to do a better job there. But by and large, I think Felix is competing. And it's a consistency in stuff and location. It's as simple as that. And it just hasn't been It hasn't been six clean innings most times he's been out, but we do know that he's going to compete and give us a chance. And hopefully we wind up getting into a period of time in the middle of the season where the innings start to pile up, his command really starts to refine, because the stuff has been generally consistent, you know, start to start. And that part has been encouraging.
And Danny was talking about inherited runners, Jerry. Last night, I thought one of the more impressive things I've seen Paxton do, which is saying a lot, loads up the bases in the top of the fifth, no outs, and goes strikeout, pop out, ground out. I thought, wow. I mean, of all the things that he's done, I guess not that didn't, you know, impress me more than the no-hitter or the 16 strikeouts, but, man, that was something that just showed, it seemed like a lot of development and a lot of maturity.
Yeah, and which kind of is it personifies Pax's 2018 season. He's been focused, and he just stays in there, and every inning for him is it's a new game, and he's not focused on anything more than that inning. And I think that was first of all, there aren't too many guys in the league stuff wise that can do that, and you know, he was able to do it. Unfortunately, he had an at bat in the midst of that with Hanser Alberto where it escalated, I think, to a dozen or so pitches, and mm-hmm. and effectively that's where the game swayed for us, because now instead of James going out and pitching the sixth inning, we had to call it a night. And he's thrown a lot of pitches and gone deep in every game for the last, you know, six or eight starts. So giving him a little bit of a hall pass and not asking him to go out there and run that pitch count up to 110, 115 again was the smart thing to do. And again, the bullpen did not have their best night on either of these last two nights, but him getting out of that situation, giving the team a chance to maintain or hold the lead was phenomenal, because that wasn't expected.
Wade LeBlanc starting for you tonight against Texas, 7-10 first pitch, five earned runs in five starts. He's been sensational. He's bounced around. He's been with seven different teams. What do you think has made him so effective with you?
I think having been through so many different things in his career, spending time pitching in Asia, he knows who he is, and he doesn't try to be anything more than that. He spots up his fastball. He's come up with a very effective cutter over time, which I think is something he introduced to the mix more consistently after pitching in Asia. And his changeup from the days he was pitching in college has always been an out pitch and really a dynamic pitch for him. He's not going to overpower with velocity. He controls the pace of the game. He throws strikes and generally won't beat himself with walks. And I think those are all really good traits. He's a mature pitcher. And oddly enough, you know, for those that are into more advanced metrics, you know, over his last 200 major league innings, that Wade LeBlanc has thrown up an ERA plus of about 110, which is pretty good by any standards. And for him to do that with about 7.5 strikeouts per nine, and he's walking about 2 per 9, he keeps the ball in the ballpark at what I think is a reasonable pace. He's done a great job for us, and I don't think he's doing it in a way that's unsustainable. I would suspect he's going to give up more than 5 runs in 5 starts, but we do feel like Wade has really shown us that he can be a very competitive starter in the American League right now.
Hey, Jerry, it's interesting. Jerry, I wanted to bring up something, Jerry, that you're going to think I'm crazy, and maybe you already do, but yeah, I'm always this guy that thinks that Diaz shouldn't be pitching in a non-save situation, and I understand that the game was tied the other night in the ninth inning, and I think I even know where you're going to go with this, but is it really that outrageous of me to suggest, like, if Denard Span had delivered when you had runners on second and third, scores tied, if Span had given you a 6-5 lead with an RBI single or maybe even a 7-5 lead, I just feel like it would have been different for Edwin Diaz coming in, and he wouldn't have given up 4 runs, but that he would have gotten the save that night because it would have been a different mindset for him.
I've been out there in all those situations personally, and there is a different mindset to it, but not in the tie game. If there's, when you're going in to get an inning of work when the club's got a 6-run lead or you're down by 3, that's a different mindset. When you go out there in a tie game and a home game, it's not so much. And I think the right answer to the question is, by and large, when you get your closer up, you want to get him in. So once Edwin gets hot, and in a tie game in the ninth inning, he has to get hot, especially with runners on base, with a chance to take the lead. Once he throws his pitches and he's warm and he's ready to go in, he's already been used for that day. He's already pitched. We weren't anticipating him going out there and throwing a 30-pitch inning, and neither was he. But he's been so good that at some point he had to find a lull, so to speak. And I'm glad he got it out of his system because he's been a huge part of our success, and we're going to need him tonight and tomorrow night and the night after that. But I have no problem with him pitching in a tie game at home. We would very rarely, if ever, do that on the road. But at home, it makes all the sense in the world.
Let's say this. Jerry is incredibly gracious to you, Jim, because I believe that your belief that non-save situations are like a closer's kryptonite and that all of a sudden they become an entirely different person. It's similar to those people who believe that the earth is flat, in which I have no idea how to explain to you that, no, it's actually not flat, and the pitches that he throws in a tie game are just as important as the pitches that he would throw if the save was on the line. Not only that, but if you're the home team and the game's tied after the eighth inning, there's no more save situations, so you would not be using your best pitcher because of a fear that a non-save situation, those three little words, would completely throw him off balance.
Jerry, do you endorse what Danny just said? Is that a little meaner?
I absolutely endorse that, and I believe, I guess on some level, that means I do think that Jim is great.
Jerry, do the Mariners in their clubhouse have better teammates than I have here?
I would say that is affirmative based on the last 45 seconds of this conversation.
Yeah. It was quite a tongue lashing.
It's not an unfair question.
Yeah. Hey, Jerry, I love you for not answering my statement that, you know, a while back there, a few minutes ago, because that was perfect. I didn't even ask you a question, so it didn't even warrant an answer if I'm making a statement.
Jerry, we always appreciate
he's
your time.
He's also—he's not making a statement now either.
That's correct.
Well, I didn't ask a question. I didn't ask a question.
That's right.
Jerry, thanks so much, man. We really appreciate it. It's certainly fun to watch your team. We look forward to watching them wrap up the series against Texas tonight and then Tampa this weekend. A great homestand. Thanks so much.
You got it, guys. Thanks so much.